Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. I want you to imagine a fortress. Let's say it's the most secure facility in existence.
Okay.
You've got 50-foot walls, laser tripwires, and elite guards posted every 10 feet. These guards are the best of the best trained to spot an intruder from a mile away and sound the alarm the second they see a shadow move.
Sounds impenetrable, the kind of place you would store the crown jewels or, you know, state secrets.
You would think so. But then an intruder actually shows up. He walks right up to the gate. And the guards, they don't shoot, they don't scream for backup. Instead, they unlock the gates.
They just let him in.
They usher the intruder inside, maybe offer him a drink, and then they get on the radio to the rest of the army inside the base.
And I assume they tell the army, invasion in progress.
No. They say, false alarm, everyone stand down, it's a friend. And just like that, the fortress falls without a single shot being fired. The security system wasn't broken, it was used against itself.
That is a terrifying scenario for national security, but it is an even more terrifying reality for biology.
Uh-huh.
Because this isn't a movie plot, this is what is happening on your skin right now if a tick bites you.
Today we are talking about a heist on a molecular level. We are looking at how a tiny arachnid creature with a brain smaller than a grain of sand manages to hack the most sophisticated defense network on Earth.
The human immune system.
Exactly.
It is a fascinating and somewhat disturbing topic. We aren't just talking about a bite that itches. We're talking about cellular reprogramming.
Reprogramming.
The tick is essentially rewriting the software of your immune cells to serve its own purposes.
And this brings us to the big mystery we are diving into today. Why does the body have such a hard time remembering Lyme disease?
Right.
You can get the flu once and be immune for years.
Yeah.
But you can get Lyme disease, get treated, and then get it again the next summer.
Yeah.
Why doesn't the alarm system stick?
The answer is hidden in the saliva of the tick and the specific way it manipulates a cell type that is supposed to be our greatest defender.
Okay, so before we unzip this biological mystery and, you know, look at the crime scene, we need to credit the detectives who cracked the case.
Today, we celebrate the work of Johannes Strobel, Jörg Sterry, and their brilliant team at the Medical University of Vienna.
And they had collaborators too, right?
They did, from the Austrian Academy of Sciences and others, a really impressive group.
Their paper, published in Nature Communications in 2025, has a pretty long title.
It does. It's Human Epidermal Langerhans Cells Induce Tolerance and Hamper T-Cell Function Upon Tick-Borne Pathogen Transmission.
But it's a dense, beautifully constructed piece of research that fundamentally changes how we think about skin immunology.
And it couldn't come at a better time. We are seeing a massive rise in tick-borne diseases globally. Lyme disease, or borreliosis, is the big one.
It feels like every year the map just gets redder. Thanks to climate change, winters are warmer, tick habitats are expanding.
And they are moving into suburbs and parks where they never used to be. It's a major public health crisis.
Yeah.
And the clinical frustration with Lyme is real. Usually the skin is an incredible barrier. It's hostile territory for bacteria.
Right.
If you get a staph infection, your body fights it, remembers it, and is ready for next time. That is the basic principle of immunity, the memory aspect.
But with Lyme, that memory is like writing in disappearing ink. It just fades away.
That's the anomaly. Researchers have known for a while that tick bites suppress the immune system locally. It helps the tick feed without you slapping it.
Sure.
But the Vienna team wanted to know how that suppression happens at the cellular level and why it prevents long-term immunity against the bacteria the tick is carrying.
So to understand the failure, we have to meet the character at the center of this tragedy.
The Langerhans cell.
The Langerhans cell.
They are the sentinels of the epidermis, the outermost layer of your skin. If you look at skin under a microscope, they form this beautiful, dense network.
They look like dendrites, right? Like star-shaped cells.
Yeah, reaching out to touch everything around them.
So going back to our fortress, these are the guards on the wall.
They are the first guards. Their entire evolutionary purpose is to taste the environment. If they find a foreign invader, an antigen, they grab it.
Okay.
Then they're supposed to undergo a transformation. They mature, detach from the skin, and migrate.
They leave the wall.
They have to. They run to the lymph nodes, which are the command centers or the police stations of the immune system.
And there they present the evidence.
Exactly. They present the antigen to the T cells. They effectively say, look what I found. Go kill it.
So in a normal scenario, say a splinter with some random dirt bacteria, the Langerhans cell grabs the bacteria, runs to the lymph node, screams, attack!
And the T cells swarm out to kill the invader. Correct. That creates inflammation, redness, swelling the battle.
But the researchers notice that when ticks are involved, the sequence breaks down.
It does. They observed that in tick bites, the Langerhans cells still leave the skin. They disappear from the bite site.
So the guards are abandoning their post.
They are. But the cavalry never arrives. The immune response is weak or non-existent.
So the question was, if the guards are going to the police station, why aren't the police coming out? What message are they delivering?
Exactly.
Now, this is where the paper gets really cool, because usually in science, you just study mice.
And mice are great, but they aren't humans. Tick saliva reacts differently with human skin.
So how did they track these microscopic traitors in actual people?
They use a methodology that I think is just brilliant in its thoroughness. They combined real clinical data with some very advanced, almost sci-fi lab models.
Okay, so first, the real world.
First, they went to the source. They recruited volunteers who had actual tick bites.
Wanted. People recently bitten by blood-sucking parasites.
Essentially. They took skin punch biopsies from the bite sites and compared them to healthy skin from the same person.
Which gives them a snapshot of what happens in the wild.
But that's messy. You don't know how long the tick was there or which species it was. So they needed a way to simulate a bite in a controlled environment. So they developed an ex vivo model. They obtained fresh human skin explants. Usually this is skin left over from plastic surgeries, tummy tucks, or breast reductions.
And they keep this skin alive in a dish.
Yeah. And then instead of putting a whole tick on it, they went deeper. They wanted to isolate the chemistry, so they used tick salivary gland extract.
SGE?
Yes. They essentially dissected the salivary glands of Ixodes racinus ticks, the castor bean tick, and created a pure extract.
That is undeniably gross. Just a vial of concentrated tick spit.
It is potent stuff. And they injected this extract into the human skin explants to mimic the feeding process. This allowed them to control exactly how much spit the cells were exposed to.
Okay, so they have the skin, they have the spit. But how do they know what the cells are thinking? You can't just, you know, interview a cell.
You can if you speak their language, and their language is RNA. The team used single-cell RNA sequencing.
Wait, pause there. I hear RNA sequencing a lot. How is single-cell different from the normal kind?
Great question. Think of traditional RNA sequencing like a fruit smoothie. You take a piece of tissue, grind it up, and you can tell me, okay, there's a lot of strawberry and banana in here. You get the average gene expression of millions of cells mixed together.
But you don't know if the strawberry flavor came from one giant strawberry or a million tiny ones?
Exactly. Single cell sequencing is like a fruit salad. You can pick out every single grape, every slice of kiwi, and analyze them individually.
So for this study,
they could look at each specific Langerhans cell and read its transcriptome, which is basically its diary. They could see exactly which genes were turned on and off in every individual cell.
That is an incredible level of resolution.
It gets better. They didn't just want to see the cells in the skin. They wanted to see what happens when those cells meet the army, the T cells.
You can't easily track that inside a living human.
No. So they built immune spheroids.
Spheroids, like little spheres.
They are 3D structures. They took cells from a human spleen, which is full of T cells and B cells, and engineered them into these tiny floating orbs in a petri dish.
So they're like artificial lymph nodes.
That's a perfect way to put it. They're organoids. It allows them to introduce the Langerhans cells to these artificial lymph nodes and watch the interaction. It's a complete model of the immune journey entirely outside the body.
Okay, that is impressive. They built a fake body to trick the cells into revealing their secrets. So let's get to the findings. The researchers have injected the tick spit. What happens to our guards, the Langerhans cells?
The first thing they confirmed was the migration. This was a critical finding. You might think that tick saliva would just kill the cells or paralyze them.
Right.
But it didn't. The transcriptomic data showed a massive upregulation of two specific genes, CXCR4 and CCR7.
Code names. Decipher them for us.
Think of them as GPS coordinates or access passes. CXCR4 is a receptor that helps cells navigate through the dermis, the deeper skin layer.
And CCR7.
That's the key that unlocks the door to the lymphatic vessels.
So the tick saliva is literally handing the guards a map and a key and saying, hey, why don't you take a break, go visit the lymph nodes?
It's not just a suggestion, it's a chemical command. The spit accelerates their departure. They physically leave the battlefield.
Now, play devil's advocate here. Isn't that what they're supposed to do? If I'm a guard and I see an intruder, I'm supposed to run to headquarters to report it. Why is this bad?
It would be good if they were carrying the right message. But this is where the heist reveals itself. The researchers looked at the other genes that were turned on, the genes that control what the cell says to the T cells.
The message itself.
Usually, when a Langerhans cell migrates, it turns on inflammatory genes, genes like NFKB or IRF1. These scream danger.
But under the influence of tick saliva,
those genes were silent.
Silence.
Worse, they were replaced by tolerance genes, specifically genes called IDO1 and IRF4.
IDO1 and IRF4. What do those genes do?
They are immunosuppressive. IDO1, for example, produces a molecule that starves T cells or forces them to become passive.
So it's the biochemical equivalent of a white flag.
So
let me get this straight. The tick spits on the skin. The spit tells the Langerhans cells to leave the post and run to the police station. But it also hypnotizes them so that when they get there, instead of screaming murder, they whisper peace.
That is the perfect analogy. They are reprogrammed from being pro-inflammatory soldiers into tolerogenic diplomats. They are actively advocating for the intruder.
But wait, ticks aren't just sterile needles. They carry bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
Borrelia burgdorferi, the Lyme bacteria.
All right.
Bacteria are loud. They're messy biological invaders. Shouldn't the presence of the bacteria snap the Langerhans cells out of their trance?
That was the million-dollar question. Is the bacterial alarm louder than the tick's lullaby?
So they tested it.
They did. The team added Borrelia to the mix. They exposed the skin to both the bacteria and the tick saliva at the same time.
The ultimate showdown. Who won?
The tick saliva won, hands down. When they exposed cells to just bacteria-like Staphylococcus, the cells got angry. They fought.
But when Borrelia was mixed with tick saliva,
the cells remained in that tolerogenic state. They still expressed the peacekeeping genes IDO1 and IRF4.
That is actually kind of frightening. The spit basically puts a cloaking device on the bacteria.
It creates a safe haven. The saliva masks the danger signals. So the Langerhans cells arrive at the lymph node carrying the bacteria, but they tell the T cells, this is fine, ignore this.
And since the T cells, the generals only know what the scouts tell them, they believe it.
And we saw the consequences in the spheroid model. In a healthy response to bacteria, you want the lymph node to produce Th1 and Th17 cells.
The special forces.
Yes, the hunter killers designed to destroy bacteria.
I assume those didn't show up.
Barely. Instead, the corrupted Langerhans cells induced the production of regulatory T cells, Tregs.
Tregs, I've heard of those. They're the brakes of the immune system.
Yes. Their job is to prevent autoimmune disease. They stop the body from attacking itself. They dampen inflammation.
So the tick saliva tricks the body into hitting the brakes at the exact moment it should be slamming on the gas. This explains the amnesia we talked about at the start. You don't get immunity to Lyme disease because your body never actually fights a war. It signs a peace treaty before the first shot is fired.
Precisely. You cannot develop a strong immunological memory if the initial alarm was never sounded. The bacteria multiply, spread, and hide all under the cover of this induced tolerance.
It changes how I look at a tick. It's not just a parasite. It's an active partner in crime with the bacteria.
Or you could view it as the bacteria exploiting the tick. The tick just wants to feed quietly. It suppresses the immune system to stop the itching and swelling so you don't scratch it off.
And the bacteria just hijacks that silence to sneak in.
It's a masterclass in evolution.
But now that we know how the trick works, can we stop it? What does this mean for the future of medicine?
The implications are huge, particularly for vaccines. We have struggled to make a lasting Lyme vaccine for humans.
Because the bacteria changes, right?
That, and because our natural immunity is so poor, as we just discussed, this research suggests a radical pivot. Instead of vaccinating against the bacteria, maybe we should vaccinate against the tick.
An anti-tick vaccine, so you're immune to the spit.
Exactly. Imagine if your body was trained to recognize the specific proteins in tick saliva that cause this reprogramming, like the ones triggering IDO1.
So if a tick bites you, your antibodies attack the spit immediately.
Neutralizing the pacifist signal. If you block the signal, the Langerhans cells don't get hypnotized. They see the Borrelia, they get angry, and they trigger a massive Th17 response.
You kill the bacteria before it even leaves the skin. You don't fight the infection, you break the delivery system.
It's a preventative strategy that targets the vector, not the pathogen. And it could work for any disease the tick carries, babesiosis, Powassan virus.
Because they all rely on that same salivary immunosuppression.
That's the idea.
That would be a game changer for anyone who loves the outdoors. But earlier, you mentioned something else, a flip side to this research.
Yes. This is where we get into what you might call biohacking. Think about what the tick saliva is actually doing. It is incredibly efficient at calming down the immune system.
It turns off inflammation.
And induces tolerance. And there are millions of people suffering from diseases where the immune system is too loud.
Autoimmune diseases. Lupus, psoriasis, rheumatoid arthritis.
Conditions where the body attacks itself. We currently treat them with blunt instruments, steroids, immunosuppressants that knock out your whole system.
But the tick has a scalpel.
The tick has a molecular key. We have identified that these specific salivary components upregulate IDO1 and IRF4. What if we could isolate those molecules? What if we could synthesize a drug based on tick saliva?
You could use it to treat allergies.
Potentially. Or organ transplants. One of the biggest risks in transplant surgery is rejection, the immune system attacking the new organ.
Right.
Imagine if we could use a tick-derived therapy to locally reprogram the Langerhans cells around the transplant to say, this kidney is a friend, tolerate it.
That is a wild concept. Using the weapon of a blood-sucking parasite to save a kidney transplant.
It's the beauty of biology. A mechanism is neither good nor bad. It's just a tool. The tick uses it for parasitism. We could use it for healing.
So we've gone from a heist at a fortress to a potential cure for autoimmune disease. It's been quite a journey.
It really highlights why basic research is so important. Strobel and Sterry didn't start out trying to cure lupus. They just wanted to know where the skin cells went.
And they found out they were being turned into double agents.
Migrate and pacify. That is the tick's motto. The study proves that the outcome of a disease isn't just about the germ. It's about the context. The environment of the skin, the signals in the saliva, the conversation between cells.
So for the listener, the next time you pull a tick off your leg, don't just be grossed out. Have a little respect for this sophisticated chemistry experiment that was just happening on your ankle.
And then maybe check for a bullseye rash, just to be safe.
Definitely check for the rash. But this research gives us a lot of hope. It suggests that if we can learn the tick's language, we can stop listening to its lies.
And maybe even speak that language ourselves to tell the immune system to calm down when we need it to.
A fascinating possibility. The key to controlling our own immunity might be hiding in the mouth of one of nature's most annoying pests.
It certainly looks that way.
This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
A quiet needle in the meadow skin, a careful thief with patient time. Soft chemistry that settles in like lullabies without a rhyme. The surface lights begin to shift, the watch is warm, the warning thin, and something in the barrier lifts to let the deeper silence in. Compass turns in hidden hands, a pull beneath the city of. Lantern keepers leave their stands, following gentle winding trains. You make the fire forget its name, turn my signal down to slow, teach my guard to hold the flame like it's safe and not to glow. On the road where rivers run, where the quiet currents move, you trade the fight for regulation, and the night becomes approve.
In crowded rooms of lymph and light, new voices wait to learn the song. But edges blur, the grip is slight, the sharp replies don't last too long. Storm call fades, the sparks don't rise, the hard lines soften into gray. And steady hands with open eyes keep certain kinds of war at bay. A door that should have shut turns kind, a threshold dressed in velvet tones, threads of restraint are tightly twined. Around the bones of brittle bones, you make the fire forget its name. Turn my signal down to slow, teach my guard to hold the flame. Like it's safer not to blow. On the road where rivers run, where the quiet currents move, you trade the fight for regulation. And the night becomes a proof. Winter spreads and borders bend and footsteps multiply in grass. How many promises will end as needles learn to let things pass? I feel the hush inside my blood, a mercy with a crooked cause. A tender lock of velvet flood and something brave that gets lost. You make the fire forget its name, but I remember what it's for. So let the lattice cross the frame, let the stream become the roar. On the road where rivers run, where the quiet currents move,